What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Welcome to the Arrowhead Addict Podcast. Please welcome your hosts, Patrick Allen and Matt Verderam.
Welcome in. It's the Arrowhead Addict Podcast. Patrick Allen, Matt Verderam, we're back. We're in slightly better moods, I would say, from the last time that you saw us. I don't know. Verderam's still looking a little grumpy. How you feeling, Matt?
Okay. I'm looking forward to Chargers game. You know, it's recording on a Thursday, so week three officially begins today with the Panthers and whatever the hell the Texans are. And then we can get into it. I think today is always a day. I look at it like you move on. As a player, you got to move on like the second the game's over. But as a fan or an analyst, or whatever, once the new week starts, then you've got to just okay, it's over, it's behind you, whatever. You move on to what's in front of you, and I think now you can do that if you're a Chiefs fan. You can head to the Chargers.
Yeah, absolutely. Time to move on. It hurt. It was annoying. There are concerns. We'll talk about some of those concerns. But I've got a concern that's probably even greater than that of the Chiefs defense. I can't find Count Chocula anywhere.
That's a tragedy.
I've been to the Jewel, which is a grocery store here in Chicago. I've looked at Walmart. I've looked at Mariano's, another grocery store here in Chicago. I don't know. Somebody told me that they had it at Target. And like, I'm a little bit annoyed because there's not like a Target super close to me, so I'm going to have to drive really far. Of course, it's worth it, but I'll be pissed if I go all the way out to some random Target outside of the city and they don't have Count Chocula. But like, my wife went to, over the weekend, she was running to the store to pick some things up, and I said, hey, listen, can you head down the cereal aisle for me, and if you see Count Chocula, pick me up a box. She comes home and she's like all proud of herself, and she's like, I got you Count Chocula. And I was like, are you serious? I was like, oh my God, I'm going to give you another ring, right?
Yeah.
She pulls out of the bag. Do you remember back in the summer when I found those Count Chocula cereal bars?
Yeah.
And I was like reviewing them. She pulls out a box of those and she's like, I found Count Chocula. And I was like, that's not, I mean, look, it's better than nothing.
You should have taken the first ring.
Right. And then she was upset with me because I was like annoyed that she didn't get that it wasn't actually Count Chocula, even though she did me a favor, because I'm a horrible person. But yeah, so we got a problem. I don't know what I'm going to do. I might need some of you out there in the kingdom to procure me some and just mail it to me.
You can't find any at Target?
I haven't gone to Target yet because it's kind of far away.
You got to go to Target, man. That's what they've got.
I'm gonna knock off work a little earlier or something today and go and pick up Halloween decorations, stuck at the house in order for my favorite season, and just see if I can find some Count Chocula. But I'm starting to get it's the first day of fall yesterday, and I haven't had any Count Chocula yet, and I'm getting really nervous.
I'm about to polish off my fourth box.
Did you stock up?
Yeah, I did. I bought four of them. Target's where it's at, man. I can't find it anywhere else, but I get it at Target.
All right. Okay.
So that's where you got to go. That's where you got to go. But I appreciate your dedication to the season. That you're literally, essentially, just taking money from the company to go get Count Chocula and some Halloween decorations. Good for you.
Yeah. Just got to. Your priorities are really important. I think the company understands that. Okay.
Yep.
So we got a great show for you today, Now, listen, we appreciate your support. You always hook us up over on Apple Podcasts. You leave us reviews and 5-star ratings over there. Please keep doing that, especially because recently we had a few grumpy people not like our show. So we got to wash those guys away. But the Arrowhead Addict YouTube channel is up and running. It's been up for a couple weeks now. And I'll tell you what, as far as YouTube channel launches go, we've had Byron Pringle, Tony Gonzalez, Mitchell Schwartz, and Alex Smith, as far as interviews over at the YouTube channel goes. That's not too bad in 2.5 weeks. I would say that that is reason enough to get your ass over there and subscribe. You could do it at youtube.com/arrowheadaddictpodcast. We're just bringing it. We're doing live shows after the games on Sundays in the evenings. Pretty great stuff. Am I right, Verderam?
Absolutely. Look, it's been fun. It's been different. And we really went into the weeds on the Ravens game, which is, I'm sure, painful for all involved, but maybe necessary. So the YouTube channel has been a joy to launch. And we really have had some great guests between Alex Smith and Byron Pringle and Mitchell Schwartz, of course, who was our first guest on the YouTube channel. And we're working on some other ones. I reached out to a very famous former player yesterday. We'll see if that'll happen. Hell, Patrick, you're not even in the loop yet on that one. So we'll see.
I wonder who it is. I'll have to guess.
Yeah.
Tell me after the show.
Yeah, I was going to say, we'll get in touch on that. It's great. We're working on a lot of different stuff. And it's really been a nice addition to the audio version of the podcast.
Yeah, and you guys have been great, and you've been supporting us. And I mentioned Alex Smith, and that's another reason to subscribe, because sometimes when we get these interviews, you know, if you just listen to the audio version, and please keep doing that, sometimes when we get these interviews, we drop those on the YouTube channel ahead of the actual podcast. So, for example, we talked to Alex Smith, 2 days ago? Monday,
I
think we did. Monday or Tuesday. So it's been up over there, and over 3,000 people have watched it. We're going to play it for you here in just a minute for those of you who have been over to the YouTube channel. But this way, you know, you got the audio version over here. You want to watch it. There's a video version over at the YouTube channel. It's awesome. And you get in on some exclusive giveaways. We're giving away a Patrick Mahomes jersey this week for folks that like us on Twitter and are subscribed to the YouTube channel. So you have to be subscribed to the YouTube channel to be in on this jersey. And we're giving it away tomorrow on Bread Friday. So if you hear this before then, make sure you're subscribed. And every time we do one of these giveaways, everybody on the YouTube channel that subscribes is going to be eligible every time. You don't have to. It's not just for the new people, but it's a great promotional tool for us. And we appreciate y'all's support.
Yeah, no, absolutely. If you hear this before that deadline, go ahead and subscribe. It's a good opportunity to get a Patrick Mahomes jersey, those are not cheap. So
no.
go out and procure one, then watch them hopefully light up the Chargers.
Yeah, absolutely. Appreciate all your support. Okay, we're going to preview Chiefs Chargers in just a minute. But first, we're going to kick it to our boy, Alex Smith. Great interview. Alex was working with Gatorade. Definitely check out the interview, and then we'll see you on the other side, and we'll talk a little bit about what Alex said, and then we'll get into the game.
Now I want to welcome a very special guest to the Arrowhead Addict podcast. You might remember him. He played quarterback for your Chiefs for 5 years in 2013-17, turned a pretty bad franchise into a really good one. Alex Smith, welcome to the pod, man. Appreciate you coming on. Let's get it right at the top. You're working with Gatorade here. You're doing something pretty unique, pretty special. I know you're going to be virtually dropping in with Mission Viejo High School out in LA. Just explain a little bit of what you're doing. It's pretty interesting how they're going to use some sweat technology to help athletes.
Yeah, man, I think this is the first of its kind. It's a game changer. To have something like this, the convenience of it, literally now you can slap this patch on, go to practice, go do your workout, whatever it is, grab your phone and scan the patch and get personalized information and data about your hydration, about your refueling. I think it's insane that technology and science has come this far, pumped that Gatorade's putting this out. So it was fun. Yeah, I visited with Mission Viejo a little earlier. They're testing them out today at practice. So I was telling the story. I remember specifically, especially in Kansas City, I do remember Rick Burkholder, the trainer there, and Gatorade came in and we're going to do this personalized sweat test for a bunch of guys on the team. And I think there were like five of us that got selected, and it course, it was like Jamal Charles and Travis Kelce and me and, you know, like very specific players. But, you know, stick these patches all over your body. You had to put this like giant Bane mask on your face and you jumped on a treadmill and we ran on a treadmill. You had to run on a treadmill for like half an hour. And then they collected these patches, they like sent them off to a lab and you got your information weeks later, you know, about what kind of sweater you were, you know, as far as like your personalized sweat profile, so that you could kind of, you could get personalized hydration, you know, for the rest of your, certainly that year career, moving forward. All of that said, now you literally just slap a patch on, go to practice and scan it when you're done with your phone. And, you know, now anybody, certainly a ton of amateur athletes, can get the exact same personalized data that usually only the most elite athletes had access to. And I think it's because of this kind of advancement and a wearable and in science. So really cool. I think people will be surprised to find out how different they are, you know, from person to person, as far as these sweat profiles go and what you need and what your body's looking for.
You know, a half hour on the treadmill, my profile would have been an ambulance. Look, you know, you mentioned Travis Kelce. I wanted to ask you about him. He might be tracking toward being the greatest tight end in NFL history. He's already a Hall of Fame player. You saw him when he came in as a rookie, third round pick out of Cincinnati, and obviously progressing into the all pro he is now. What did you see from his maturation from coming in? Because he was kind of a different dude when he first got there. And now it seems like he's really been one of the leaders of the team.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, I think Kelsey's doing stuff at Kels. I can't, have you guys figured that out yet? The last name thing?
I don't know that he's
given. I was giving him a hard time. I'm not sure he does either. I think no doubt he's on a trajectory that nobody at tight end has ever had, to have that kind of consistency year in, year out, you know, to the start of a career. Yeah, Kelce was definitely a different personality when he came in. You know, he was kind of dealing with an injury. He didn't really even play that first year. Ended up having knee surgery that was kind of bothering him and nagging him. Trav had a little knucklehead in him. You know, I think, you know, still kind of finding his way, as we all do, especially as young players in this league. But to see his maturation, I think, and for him to find the balance. And I really do give a lot of credit to Coach Reed and just kind of the environment there, where it wasn't about trying to put the clamps on a guy like Travis and his personality. I think instead just kind of trying to refine it, that he could find a balance, that he can be a leader, but he can still be crazy and silly and have fun, be goofy. But that's what makes him him. That's what makes him unique. And I think he's really thrived in an environment like that Coach Reed's kind of created, about embracing your personality, being yourself. And it's been fun to watch, because he's such a unique person on top of being an amazing player. And it's fun to see him play with that kind of emotion, to wear it. And like I said, to have really matured and grown into a leader. I recently got to visit the team and it was crazy to hear. I mean, Travis is the most tenured guy on the team, you know, as far as Kansas City years. And just kind of a sign of how far he's come. And what he means to that team, and someone I think that everybody kind of feeds off of. But to see him kind of grow into that leadership role has been really cool from afar.
Yeah, he's definitely on a Hall of Fame track. Alex, your old team, the Chiefs, they're a rough start to the season. Tough loss last night, but particularly I know you're an analyst now with ESPN, so you're tapped into everything. They've been struggling on defense, and we work a lot with the fans, and they're starting to worry. You've been on teams that have started slow and rebounded. What is your advice to Chiefs fans that feel like the sky is falling for their favorite team after just 2 weeks?
Well, I think that's a bit crazy. You know, one fluke fumble away from being 2-0 against two playoff teams. The second one was on the road, you know, last night in a hostile environment. And, you know, like I said, one fluke play from everybody being, you know, really happy at this point. I think knowing what kind of leader Spags is, knowing what kind of leader Tyrann Mathieu is on that side of the ball, I think they're going to get it figured out. I think you do have to give a lot of credit to Lamar Jackson and the Ravens. You know, they lost the opening week. It was a must-win game for them. I don't know if you guys saw in the locker room, even post-game, John Harbaugh, some of his comments, like that was about as big as a must-win game you get week two ever in the NFL. They really, I think, had their backs up against the wall, which is crazy to say 2 weeks in. So I don't think it's cause for overreaction in Kansas City. I think Spags and that side of the ball are going to get it figured out. And I think the offense is so good that really that defensive side of the ball needs to be opportunistic. You know, they need to make plays here and there. They need to come up with some stops, create some turnovers. I think you saw that last night. You know, I don't think that wasn't there. I think they were playing a really good unit on offense with Lamar, a very unique, you know, offense. They're hard to prepare for, the Ravens. They play a style and an offensive scheme that nobody else in the NFL plays. So I don't think it's cause for a reaction. I think it's early on. I want to see improvement over the course of the season, week in, week out, from that defensive side. I think that's going to be far more important and telling come, you know, December and January than anything else.
Now, I got to ask, everybody I'm sure asks you about Mahomes, right? I mean, you guys, obviously everybody knows he came in 2017, yep, sat behind him for a year. He's been really complimentary of you and vice versa. Everybody talks about Mahomes like he's perfect, right? Like he's a great basketball player and he's a great baseball player and he's obviously a great football player. I want you to give me something that he's not good at. What is he not? Does he have terrible penmanship? Is he actually secretly terrible at basketball with the hoop in the locker room? Like what is he not good at?
I don't know if he's improved on this, but he can't order a steak. I'll tell you that.
You know, yeah.
Well done with ketchup. Hopefully he's grown from that, from my days. I used to give him a really hard time at a bunch of our QB dinners. I think the amazing thing about Patrick, that I think it's important for young kids and listeners to understand out there, Patrick is not afraid of competition. He's not scared of losing. Like he will jump into anything and everything, and he doesn't blink because he loves to compete, but it's like Jordan taking the last shot thing. Like, yeah, he makes a bunch of them, but he missed a ton too. And you can't be afraid of missing to take that shot, you know? And I think that's the thing about Patrick. Like, he loves to play. Is he perfect? Heck no. You know, are you kidding? He's, you know, the quarterback tradition there was we would play Chiefs on that basketball hoop in the locker room. So instead of horse, you played Chiefs. Patrick's got some game. He does have some basketball game. I'm not going to deny him that. So I don't want to, he is a pretty good player. But he's definitely not perfect. I definitely got him more often than not on the goalpost game. He could use work there. But yeah, I think I'd say that. Like, Patrick just loves competition. He's like, you know, in a way it's like endearing. Like, come in, he's not trying to pretend something he's not. He loves sports. He loves ball. He grew up around his dad in baseball. Like, he loves competing.
Last thing, I know we got about 30 seconds left. Your favorite game playing as a member of the Kansas City Chiefs?
Gosh, there's probably a few if I had to pick one. Certainly the big playoff win, you know, and then however long that drought was a big one. You know, the home opener against the Chargers leading that comeback was a big win. And then certainly, you know, beating the Patriots. I think it was the following year when they were unveiling their banner and everybody was talking about them going 16-0. It was kind of fun to, I think, shock the country a little bit with that game. Yeah, those are a few that come to mind.
All right. Well, Alex Smith, thank you so much for joining the Arrowhead Act podcast, giving us a few minutes, of course, working with Gatorade, the GX sweat patch, helping athletes figure out how to hydrate best to keep themselves in the right shape, keep themselves healthy. Alex, appreciate it so much, man. Best of luck this year with ESPN. I hope to talk to you down the road.
Thanks, fellas. Good talking with you.
All right. We are back. Thank you guys for checking out the Alex Smith interview. Didn't get a ton of time with him. You know, he's making the rounds, but it was really cool to talk to him. First time I've gotten to talk to him in person. Verderam, had you interviewed him before?
No, I've never spoken to him, but he was great. Obviously, you have to listen to the conversation there. He's really insightful. And I think a lot of what he said is really, I don't know, I don't want to say true, because, I mean, it is true, but it's, you know, about kind of where the Chiefs are after the Baltimore game. I think if you're a player, you just view it so much differently than on the outside, right? Like, to a fan, and by the way, rightfully so, like, to a fan, you know, you wait all week for the game happens, the Chiefs lose that game the way they do, it's really frustrating, you start to panic, like, oh, what's going on, what's wrong with this team? But I think as a player, it's more like, man, that really sucks, that got away from us. All right, well, going back to work on Monday, day off Tuesday. You know, I think it's more of like that kind of melodic quality than as a fan, where it's like, ugh, they lost. Now I got to think about the game. And whereas as a player, I think those guys, like, listen, that game probably bothered them till about middle of the day Monday. And then it's like, all right, we got to get ready for the next game. Like, you can't,
right?
You don't have the luxury of a player of, as a player, sitting there for like 4 days and being annoyed about the game. You just don't. Yeah. Like, you can't do that, or you'll lose the next game.
Yeah. And it's their job. And they're like, yeah, I think to your point, we look forward to it all week. And not that they don't, but it's they're showing up for work. It's a business trip,
it's
right?
Their job.
Yeah, and for us, it's entertainment. And so it stings a little bit. And this team can be so entertaining. And look, there's going to be games this season where they blow teams out and stuff. And those are really fun games to watch. You crack open a beer. You watch Mahomes do ridiculous things. This is great. We finally have a good team. And the last couple weeks have been super stressful as a fan and frustrating because the defense hasn't been playing well. And you feel like, oh, man, like, you know, you're thinking about the future. And the team can't do that. I mean, obviously, they need to think about the future. They need to fix things, but they're going into the lab and they believe in themselves. These are professional football players. You don't get to this level without believing in yourself. So if you think that Chris Jones and Frank Clark and Derek Nnadi and all these guys are like, yeah, we're going to be terrible on defense all year, I guess this is just the way it is. Don't be surprised if they turn it around. We've seen this happen before. The year they won the Super Bowl, defense was terrible earlier in the year and then got things shored up a little bit, became opportunistic, and then they won the Super Bowl. And it was the defense who had to go out there and stop the 49ers from, and they did it. So I think that's what Alex Smith said, is I think this is a defense that needs to be opportunistic, and he believes in Spags and says that Spags is a good leader. So maybe all of you out there with the, we need to fire Spags, it might be time to pump the brakes on those
guys. Oh, it's definitely time to pump the brakes on that. People need to calm down about that. They're not, if you ever had a bad day at work, maybe a bad week, did your boss come out and go, listen, it's time to let you go? You've done some incredible work, but you had a bad week this week. You know, didn't like the projections. You're going to have to move on from you. You can't do that. I mean, if you fired a coordinator or a coach after every bad week or even a bad couple of weeks, I mean, every coach would be fired. Belichick would have been fired 50 times over. But you can't do that. Look, I've had obviously like every other Chiefs fan in the world time to think about that game and the last couple games and where they should go from here. And I've come to a few conclusions that I'm really going to stick with throughout the year. I'm not even that concerned about how many running yards or rushing yards they give up, because teams can run all day long, but it comes down to two things for me. Third down and red zone. If the Chiefs are good on third down and they're good in the red zone or passable in the red zone, they're going to win every game they play. It doesn't matter. You can move the ball to the 20. If you kick a field goal against Kansas City, you might as well take the ball and punt it into the stands. It just doesn't matter. They're never losing games because teams are kicking field goals. And for me, that's been the most frustrating part of this whole thing to this point, is they have been brutal in the red zone. They were dead last season. They made it a point of emphasis. They talked about it all offseason, and that teams are 8-for-8 scoring touchdowns in the red zone. I mean, that kind of crap is what kills you. And the amazing thing is, and this is, I actually think this is a point of, to show how great they are in some ways. So they are 8-for-8, which, if you'd like to look at it the other way, 0-for-8 as a defense in the red zone. They played two top 10 teams in the league, and no one would argue that. And yet here the Chiefs are, 1-1, and if Clyde Edwards-Helaire doesn't fumble, probably 2-0. Like,
yeah.
They're that dominant. And that's where I look at the Chiefs and say, listen, do they have to get better? Absolutely. Absolutely. In a lot of ways. And by the way, they can't give up 6 yards a clip on the ground like they're doing right now. Who also, by the way, fun note, who's second worst in the league? The Chargers at 5.6. But, you know, look, if you're Kansas City, there's no doubt you've got to be much better. Now, for the record, on third down so far, if you're wondering, they are 24th in the league, 44.4% allowed. Okay. 8-of-18. The Chargers, they're 25th. They're right behind it. So, but the problem is the red zone, no team has given up more red zone touchdowns. Atlanta, who's giving up 40 points a game, has given up fewer red zone touchdowns in Kansas City. Okay. Now, there are some teams that are 100% in terms of giving it up. The Raiders are actually one of them, but only 3 trips in the red zone. Detroit, Carolina, Green Bay, right? But this has been a problem for the Chiefs now for years. If they win on third down and they win in the red zone, and I'm just talking like average. I'm not saying like they even have to be top. If they're just like middle of the league in those two categories, they're never losing another football game. Because the offense is so ridiculous that if they're good at just limiting teams to a field goal here and there, if they're good at getting off the field on third downs, forget it. But that has obviously not been the case the first 2 weeks.
And this is largely the same team. You can make the argument they should be better. They should be better on defense than they have been the last couple of years because of some of the additions that they've made. Hughes, Willie Gay, Bolton looks like he's going to be able to be a player for them as he continues to get up to speed. Jerron Reed. So, you know, there's maybe some gelling that's happening. It's early in the season. Are they going to be a great dominant defense? Doesn't look like it, but you just never know. But yeah, they've given up 404 yards rushing. They're averaging 202 yards per game giving up on rushing. That's horrendous. That is far and away the worst. The next one is Seattle's given up 162.5, and then the Chargers at 162. But if you're worried about Clyde Edwards-Helaire, he should be able to move the ball on the ground in this game. If he can't, then I don't know. I don't know what to tell you, but
My biggest concern with him is just the complete lack of vision he has sometimes. There are times where you watch the film, and he has holes the size of Texas and just runs into somebody's rear end. You're like, how do you not see that? You're a running back. That was always, to me, of all the things that made Jamaal Charles great, that was always the thing that to me was the most impressive. He would find the tiniest sliver of daylight, and of course, with his speed, he would just zoom through it, and it'd be what would have been a 2 yard gain turned into a 7 yard gain. I don't expect Clyde Edwards-Helaire to be Jamaal Charles. I do expect him to be able to run to daylight, and there have been plays where he's had big holes. I mean, they're not struggling to run the ball because they can't block. Their offensive line has been really, really good this year. Their problem has been he just does not see the hole. And I got to tell you, I don't know what you do with that other than say maybe it's time, you know, Jared McKinnon gets some more snaps. Maybe it's time Darrell Williams gets some more snaps. But I don't think that's going to happen because Edwards-Helaire is a first-round pick, and like most teams will try to justify that till the end of time. I don't think he's the best running back in the team. Like, I really don't. I would rather have McKinnon or Darrell Williams out there. Now, look, it's not because I think Edwards-Helaire is an unplayable guy. I don't want to have him misconstrued. I just think that right now he's not a blocking back. He cannot block, and he does not have great vision. He doesn't. And the thing that I've seen people say this, well, like, yeah, but he's going to get better. You know, it's guys kind of either have vision or they don't. Like, he's not just all of a sudden going to wake up tomorrow and be, you know, I really should have hit that cutback lane. Like, he just
right.
You kind of have a feel for that, and I just worry with him that that's kind of who he is.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen him have good games. We've seen him run well. It's tough, man, but I agree with you. Look, McKinnon's a good player, man. He's had some injury issues, but I would at least start giving him a series here and there and just kind of see what happens. Because of all the running backs, you know, when he caught that screen, he looked the most electric. He looked quick. He looked powerful, trying to ram his way into the end zone. Like, it was a small sample size, but he ran well in the preseason as well. I would start getting him mixed in a little bit if you're not seeing what you want to see from Clyde, because you got to know what you have in these other guys. All right, let's talk a little bit more about the game here. So this is a big one, and it's really interesting because as you pointed out, the Chargers, who I think we all thought they're going to have a really strong defense this year. They've got Bosa. They've got Derwin James. Chris Harris Jr. is dealing with an injury. In fact, actually, let's just get through the injury report real quick. So for the Chiefs, everybody's practicing, but Chris Jones, Anthony Hitchens, and Derek Nnadi were limited on Wednesday with a wrist, abdomen, and hip, respectively. I'm sure all those guys will be fine. That's a tough game. On Sunday night, those guys were getting pounded. They weren't hitting anybody, but they were getting pounded. So I'm sure Andy's just kind of letting them heal up a little bit. It's a long season. On the Chargers side, three really interesting did not practice. Joey Bosa, the foot and ankle. Derwin James with the toe. We know he's had his injury history. And then Chris Harris Jr. with a shoulder. Chris Harris Jr. did not play last week. So he sounds right. like right now probably the long shot to maybe not be on the field on Sunday. From the little bit I was able to find, it sounds like Bosa and James may just be precautionary. They're a little banged up, and they're giving them Wednesday off. So, but keep an eye on the injury report. If you see them not practicing today, then if I'm a Chargers fan, I'm getting a little bit concerned, because generally you want them to have practiced by Friday for them to play on Sunday, but not with guys like that. You know, if they're ready to go on Sunday, they'll play them. But interesting. Not where you want to be if you're the Chargers, having your three best defensive players a little bit banged up.
No doubt. Look, this is definitely not ideal for the Chargers. And I always – look, I get the whole precautionary thing. I would anticipate that James and Bosa will play. But those guys are hurt a lot. Like, it would also freak me out. If I was a Chargers fan, I'd be like, well, why are they not practicing already? Like, we're playing the Chiefs, it's week three. That those guys aren't going to be able to get out there yet. So that would concern me. You know, now, listen, I think you know, this is a game where if those two guys don't make big impacts, I don't think the Chargers can stop the Chiefs once. I really feel that way. You said at the beginning of what you were talking about there that, you know, a lot of people thought Chargers would have a good defense. I got to be honest. Maybe I'm one of the rare. I did not think they'd be good this year defensively. I thought they'd be good offensively. Bosa and James are it. You go look at that team. Go find me who else is an upper echelon player defensively. I mean, Michael Dave's a decent corner. You mentioned how I actually really like Asante Samuel Jr., the rookie corner there out of FSU, second round pick. I remember talking to him pre-draft. He's a super interesting kid. Obviously, his father was a great player. Their front seven is atrocious outside of Bosa. Like, if you're the Chiefs, I will say this. If you can't run in this game, give it up. I mean, just give it up. If you can't run the ball against the Chargers front seven, if Edwards-Helaire can't find some holes, some creases, and gain 100 yards in this one, should they try to do that, forget it. They really, if this is the game they can't get off the schneid running the football, I think it basically just becomes one of those things where you're like, all right, well, we just can't run the ball again. But it's going to be interesting. Look, Derwin James has been the one guy who one-on-one has done a good job with Kelsey when he's played him. Now, I don't think they have anybody who can guard Hill. Even doubling him, I think they're going to have a hard time. They just do not have another very good safety. Nassir Adderley, who was a second-round pick the same year Thornhill was, he's been kind of an injury-riddled guy for them. Hasn't made a big impact. Their corners, again, especially if Harris doesn't play, it's not a group, like, with all due respect to Davis and Samuel, I mean, you're putting one of those guys on Tyreek and hoping you stop him. Good luck. I don't think that's happening. So I think the Chiefs are going to be able to do a lot of things offensively. They're going to score a lot of points. And the Chargers have given them trouble in the past with their cover three defenses. But don't forget, this is a new defense now. This is not that defense. So I think Kansas City is going to score a lot. The question is, how many points do the Chargers score? Which I think also is probably going to be a lot.
Yeah, and let's talk about how many points we think the Chargers can score. Justin Herbert is a good quarterback. Struggling a little bit this year. He's thrown for a lot of yards. They're throwing a ton in their games so far. I believe he's thrown over 30 times in each game. Yeah, 41 attempts, actually. Over 40 attempts. 40 against Dallas last week. 41, I'm sorry. And then 47 attempts against the football team. Chargers lost to Dallas last week at the end of the game, 20-17. They beat the football team in week one, 20-16. That was a game, remember, where Ryan Fitzpatrick got hurt. They brought in Tyler Heinicke, who looks like he might be a starting quarterback. What we've seen of him so far, he's definitely shown some promise. But we'll worry about the football team in a few weeks here. But for Herbert, throwing for a lot of yards, he's completing 70% of his passes, 7.7 yard average, but only two touchdowns and three interceptions. He's turning the ball over a lot. And one of the reasons why might be pressure that teams have been able to get on him. We know, we've talked about in this podcast, that he stands in well against pressure, but he's been sacked four times, two times in each game. So having a little bit of difficulty keeping him upright, is this a big opportunity, Verderam, for the Chiefs defense to pin their ears back a little bit and try to get after Herbert and force him into some mistakes?
I think they're going to have to. And look, if I've got the Pro Football Reference page pulled up, which, by the way, is just an incredible wealth of knowledge. And so if you look at his numbers, he's only been inaccurate, according to Pro Football Reference, on 10.5% of throws, which is great. For reference, Mahomes has been inaccurate on 15.2%. So Herbert, Look, he's dotting it up. Nobody has more on-target throws than Justin Herbert, 73. Now, again, he's had 88 attempts. So out of 88 times, he's hit the guy right in the number 73 times. If you're looking at his on-target percentage, I mean, he's right there, right at the top, 84.9, right? So he's been somebody who has caused issues. Now, I do think it's interesting. I always try to look at like air yards because, you know, how much of it is run after the catch? How much of it, you know, is thrown deep? Well, Herbert's fourth in the league with 675 passing yards. You mentioned 88 attempts. It's a lot of attempts. But he's thrown for quite a bit in the air. I mean, he really has. In fact, he's basically there with Mahomes right toward the top five. So they've thrown a lot of intermediate routes. They get down the field. This is going to have to be something that they, you know, the Chiefs are ready for. Mike Williams is a good deep ball receiver. He's a big guy. If I'm Kansas City, I would put Snead on Allen, and I would put Hughes on Williams. Hughes is a big guy. He's physical. He's kind of like Breland was, maybe a little bit more of an athletic profile. And I think if you're the Chiefs, look, the matchup you have to win in this game, that you have to win. Jones has to be able to beat Storm Norton, their backup right tackle, and beat him like a drum. To the point that the Chargers have to double him, leave guys in. Like, because I'll tell you right now, Rashawn Slater, their first round pick, their left tackle, that guy looks unbelievable. I mean, he's probably going to race Frank Clark from the game. So if you're the Chiefs and they have an all-pro center, Corey Linsley up front, okay, but the right side of their line is not good. Brian Bulaga is on IR for them. Okay, he's out a few weeks. So the Chargers are missing their right tackle, their high-priced right tackle. And then if you look at the other side, look, you got Slater on the left side, Matt Filer, who they signed as a guard away from Pittsburgh in the offseason, 3-year deal. But they have Ode Abushi at right guard and Storm Norton at right tackle. Like, you have to win your matchups on that side of the line. You have to win those. I would expect that the Chiefs, when they bring blitzes, will bring it to the left side to try to force them to slide protection so that the Chiefs get one-on-one matchups on the right side. If Kansas City cannot win those matchups and Herbert is time to throw in this game, the winner is going to be whoever the hell has the ball last. That's it. Because the Chargers are going to score at will if Kansas City cannot get pressure on that side.
Well, let's talk about Austin Ekeler, because he, given the way that the Chiefs have been playing on defense, is probably the primary concern heading into this game. Now, they haven't been running him. So he had 15 carries for 57 yards against the football team and a touchdown. He had no receptions in that game. Herbert's eating up a lot of the offensive snaps throwing the ball, and rightfully so. But he only averaged 3.8 against Washington. They're a good defense. They were very strong last year. Against Dallas, who's not a good defense, they ran a little less. Only 9 carries for Ekeler, but 6.0 yards per carry, 54 yards. And they threw the ball to him 9 times for 61 yards. So he's a dual threat. That's a problem for the Chiefs. They've not traditionally been good against these dual threat running backs. Now they're not good against running backs, period. But Dallas did manage to hold them to the Chargers to 17 points. How concerned are you that we're going to see a little bit of what we saw against Cleveland, where the Chargers mix it up, they're running the ball, they're throwing passes out of the backfield, and I think, you know, right now, if I had to take in a draft Herbert or Mayfield, I'm taking Herbert. That's concerning with the play action game and the Chiefs focusing on stopping the run. How do you think Spags tries to attack the Chargers in a game where he's really not sure what they're going to be doing when they go to line up?
I don't, even though you look at the numbers and say, well, they should obviously just pound the football, I don't think they're going to. I just don't think that's who they are. They want to throw the ball, which for the Chiefs might not be the worst thing in the world right now. I went back and looked. So since Spagnuolo's been there, obviously the Super Bowl year of 2019, here are Ekeler's numbers against Kansas City. The Mexico City game, he ran 5 times for 24 yards. He had 8 receptions on 12 targets for 108 yards. Then the Week 17 game in KC, he ran for 46 yards on 9 carries. He had 9 receptions, this time only 43 yards. Okay, Chiefs won both those games. Now, last year, First game, Eckler, 16 carries, 93 yards. Four catches, 55 yards. And then the last game comes with an asterisk because the Chiefs played basically nobody in that game. But he ran seven times for 18 yards. Actually did a good job holding him. And then six catches for 33 yards. The point is, he's probably going to get targeted a bunch in this game. Like, he's had no problem having a half dozen catches. I think if you're the Chiefs, and I don't think I'm going to go on record, they're probably not going to do this because it's not the way Spags plays, but it's what I would do if I was in their situation. I would play a dime defense against them on a lot of downs. I'd basically say, I don't care if you run the ball. I don't care, which I know is going to annoy some people, but I would say, look, we're going to put Thornhill on Eckler in this game. He is not going to beat us. We're taking him completely out of the game, putting Snead on Allen. We're going to roll safety over the top of Williams, and you go ahead and beat us with guys like Guyton. I don't care. That's how you're beating us. Like now, they won't do that because it's just not who they are. But if I were the Chiefs, that's what I would do, because I think the biggest way to get beat by them in this game is Williams over the top, is Eckler bleeding you to death on third and six, and they swing it out to him, and he's one-on-one with Ben Neiman. It's Keenan Allen on third down. Like, on third down, I would double Keenan Allen. I would double him every single time it's third down. You think it's a passing down. I would double him. I think that is the way, again, to beat them, because I don't think they're going to – look, they might run the ball some, but I don't think – they're not Cleveland. They're not Baltimore. They're not going to run the ball for 240 yards. They're just not. That's not who they want to be. It's not who they are. If I'm the Chiefs, I'm sitting there saying nothing cheap, nothing deep. They're not beating me over the top of Williams, and they're not going to just bleed me to death with Eckler. I'll live with Keenan Allen underneath against Snead one-on-one. If Snead can take him out, that's great. If he can't, and he's got eight catches for 85 yards, I'll live with that. I don't care. And then on third down, he's not going to beat me on third down. I'll bring in Dime. We'll go six defensive backs. I'll double him, whatever it takes. But I'm not a D coordinator, and Steve Spagnuolo's forgotten more about football than Oliver knows. So take that for what it's worth. But I think that's the way the Chiefs should play them.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. The thing about Eckler, right, he's not a big guy. So he's – and I'm not saying he's not tough, but he's going to be a little bit easier to bring down for the Chiefs defenders than some other running backs. Obviously, definitely, you know, you're not bringing Nick Chubb or Lamar Jackson down with arm tackles. Eckler's 5'10", 200 pounds. So they probably don't want to pound him too much anyway. They've got Justin Jackson. He ran four times for 21 yards. Interestingly enough, though, Dallas lit up Tampa Bay's secondary, which Tampa Bay has not been good defending the pass this year. They've been giving up a lot of points. Dallas lit them up. They come into this game against the Chargers, though, and they run the ball 31 times. Dak Prescott only throws 27 passes, 13 carries for Tony Pollard, who right now is running twice as well as Ezekiel Elliott, who I didn't see that one coming. But even Ezekiel Elliott, who hasn't been able to really get going, averaged 4.4 yards a carry against this team. Tony Pollard, interesting guy, 6 feet, 209 pounds. Is this a game where you want to see Jerick McKinnon out there mixing it up?
I'd rather see Jerick McKinnon than Edwards Alaire. And no, not because of a fumble. Okay. Like, you don't base a guy's value off of one play. But McKinnon is a good pass catcher. He's a much better blocker. And I think he's about as good of a runner, if not better. Like, look, if Edwards Alaire was a fourth round pick, would the Chiefs still be invested in playing him a ton? I don't know. I mean, why? Like, look, with all due respect to Clyde, what has he ever done that you're like, man, we've got to make sure he's out there? Now, by the way, again, for the last time, I'm going to say this one more time. It's not that I don't think he can play. He's not a bad player. Like, this idea that he's some terrible player is nonsense. It's not true. But, yes, he's not been overwhelming. He's not been great. If you go look at his game logs from a year ago, the first game of the year, his first game ever, he ran for 138. Against Buffalo, famously, right, he runs for 161. He has not had any other game in his career where he's rushed for 80 yards. Like, he's a guy. That's what he is. He's a guy. He's never had a game where he's caught more than six passes, which, by the way, the time he caught six passes was against the Chargers in week two. Okay. Other than that, here are his catch totals since week two of last year. 5-3-3-4-1-3-3-1-1-5-1. And then this year, 1-2. Like,
I don't understand it. I thought that that was why they drafted this guy, was to have another a weapon out of the backfield. And he's done that. I mean, Brian Westbrook, for goodness sake. Like, what? But they're not, they're just not calling them for
there's just, there's, there's, listen, they'll never come out and say it. There's something going on. There's something, either it's a playbook thing or it's a they don't trust him thing. There's something more to the issues at hand here. I mean, now, by the way, we're talking about McKinnon like he's some god. McKinnon hasn't had a 100-yard game since October 19, 2014. Okay, so, I mean, let's not get that twisted either.
Sure.
But, you know, I mean, look, he's also a guy who can catch the ball. Like, he's had a lot of games in his career. He's had more than a half dozen catches, a lot, even recently. So, I would play him. I would play him. I would. I don't think it's like, oh, my God, everything's better now because we have Jared McKinnon on the team. I think that would be an aggressive oversimplification of things. But, yeah, I mean, I think you can make an argument McKinnon's just a flat-out better player. You can't make the argument that Darrell Williams is better. That you can't make that argument. But right. You could make the argument that McKinnon is, and if McKinnon's better, they should play him.
And it's not like the plays don't exist. When Kareem Hunt was with the Chiefs, in 2017, he got 53 passes for 455 yards and three touchdowns. In 2018, before he went full knucklehead and got himself thrown off the team,
yep.
he had 26 receptions for 378 yards in 11 games. He was averaging 14.5 yards per reception. He had seven receiving touchdowns. By the way, he also had 824 rushing yards and seven rushing touchdowns. Like, it was so exciting watching him that season. And I was like, oh man, like this is absolutely incredible. This guy is out of this world. This offense is so dynamic. And like, I feel like when we drafted Clyde, like that's what everybody thought was the point. Was like, all right, we lost Kareem Hunt, we need to get that back. It makes us so dynamic. And they're not even trying, they're not even calling these plays for him.
Well, that's to me the concerning thing. Like, they have not even made an attempt to get him involved, which I know some people say, well, then it's not his fault. Okay, fine, however you want to look at it, they're not even trying to get him on the field in pass catching situations. And by the way, part of it is because you can't block. So he's never on the field on third and six. He's never out there. You can't put him out there because you can't block anybody. If a team shows blitz and they've got to figure out a way to pick it up, they don't want him on the field. They want Darrell Williams or they want Jerick McKinnon. That was one of the reasons Charles was so immense as a pass catcher. Jamal Charles could block.
Yep.
I mean, there'd be three or four times a year he takes somebody right off his feet, which, by the way, I want to segue into this real quick because, there's been a lot of negativity. And I think, look, defensively, it's warranted. Edwards-Helaire, it's at least the questioning of some things is warranted. There's also been a lot of good things so far this year. A lot of it, of course, on the offensive side of things.
Yeah.
And one thing that I will say, if the Chiefs should be taking away anything right now after two games, they should be thrilled about, both now and in the future. Those rookies on the offensive line look really damn good.
Yeah.
Like, really good. I was actually texting with Jeff Schwartz yesterday, who's old Chief player, of course, and a buddy. And I remember when they took Trey Smith, he texted me right away. He's like, oh, this is going to be an unbelievable pick for them. Like, he's great. If you go watch the film of the Chiefs, in each of these games, there have been four or five times where Trey Smith has absolutely depleted a defensive tackle. It's happened at least eight times this year, nine times, where he'll take a guy like Brandon Williams, who is a great nose tackle, right, 335 pounds, and just throw him. Like, it's incredible how good he's been. Creed Humphrey, it's funny, like, he's a complete opposite of Smith in the sense Smith is this big physical mauler. Humphrey, by offensive lineman standards, is not a big guy, but he's so technically sound. He's been great. He's got great athleticism. He gets out in front of the play. And Niang, who I thought against Cleveland was good, not great, has been really, really good. Was great against Baltimore, if you go back and watch. And he had a tough assignment. And Justin Houston, that's a vet. That's a guy who's got a lot of sacks in this league. Justin Houston did nothing in that game. Nothing. It's completely taken away. And that's, by the way, I'm not saying that that part of it's great because the left side was. Orlando Brown, I thought, was phenomenal. And Tooney's played very well. The whole line has. But I think we expected that from Brown and Tooney. At least I did. The center, right guard, right tackle combination, which is going to be real cheap for the next 4 years. Man, if those guys stay healthy, that is one hell of a line going forward. That team up front is going to be a problem. Which is, by the way, I don't think it's a coincidence. The Chiefs offensively have just been scoring at will, save for a couple drives in the fourth quarter, unfortunately, against the Ravens. That's why. Because no one can even get near Mahomes. And if that's the case, good night, regardless of how well they run the ball.
Yeah, absolutely. We haven't talked a lot about Lucas Niang, and that's a good thing.
Because
if there was somebody on that line that we were going to be really concerned about, or you know, that was probably the candidate to be the worst addition or somebody who could struggle, it was Niang. He's out there on the side, on the end by himself. So that's great news. I want to throw in this little tidbit. Matt Connor threw this up over on Arrowhead Addict. Mike Sando over at The Athletic did some math on starting lineups in the NFL. Do you know who has the youngest starting lineup through the first 2 weeks in the NFL?
I'm just going to go off on a limb. Chiefs?
It's the Chiefs. Yeah. No team has fielded a younger starting lineups to start the season than the Kansas City Chiefs. So, you know, a lot of that's because of the offensive line, but Nick Bolton's 21. Willie Gay, when he comes back, is 23. We're over here, we're giving Clyde a really hard time. He's 22. So they've got some really young guys on this team. Some veterans mixed in there too on the defense, but it's something to take a little bit of heart with, I think, right? Early in the season, really young lineup. It hopefully bodes well for the future as well, that there's a lot of guys on the team right now that should get better. And that's only going to be a good thing for the Chiefs.
Well, I'll put it this way. As far as like the defense goes, because the offense is fantastic. Usually when people say this, they're being hyperbolic, but I'm obviously not here. They can't be any worse defensively. It is almost literally impossible. I mean, they would have to basically just grab a guy's hand and go skipping into the end zone and just escort them at this point. You can't be worse. They've barely gotten any pressure. They don't stop anybody running the football. They're 100% the wrong way in the red zone. They're bad on third down. You can't make up how bad they've been. And I really do believe there have been years with this team, God knows a lot of them, where you'll watch the Chiefs and you just go, yeah, they just don't have any talent. They're just not good. Like they, you know, there were years in the Vermeil era and God knows in the Herm era and even with Andy sometimes where you'd look at them and just go, it's just not going to happen. Like early in Reed's tenure here when they had that year, which is unfathomable now, where they didn't throw a touchdown to a receiver the whole season. You looked at their group, you're like, yeah, because they stink. Like other than Dwayne Bowe, they're all terrible. You know? Like you just knew, well, yeah, they have Donnie Avery. Like they're just really limited. That's the way this is going to be. There's no getting around that. That's not the case with this defense. Chris Jones is an all-pro player. Frank Clark, say whatever you want, disappointment. He's a good football player. Jerron Reed is a really good D tackle, and so is Derek Nani. They're different types of D tackles, but they're both very good in what they do. Anthony Hitchens is a good linebacker. Nick Bolton has had some real bad moments, but he's also had some real good ones. Legarius Sneed is a top-end corner. The Chiefs have an all-pro Hall of Fame safety. Like, that's seven guys. Like, you're not talking about some team that is nobody. And that doesn't even include guys like Dana and Saunders, who I actually think Saunders has been good this year. Okay. That doesn't even include guys like that. Willie Gay, who I reported on Tuesday, looking up right now with his recovery. This is a big week. My understanding, I was told by a source, they're ramping up his activity this week with the toe. If the toe does well, come out okay, there's a chance he plays week four against Philadelphia. So hopefully I'll have an update on him here around Friday or Saturday. But as of right now, the Chiefs are hopeful that he can play week four, really dependent upon how he looks as the trainers give him a full workup this week. So you're going to get him back here hopefully very soon. And the Chiefs, for everybody who's been bitching about Spagnuolo, the guy is one of the best coordinators in football. There are not five coordinators better than him in the league. There really aren't. Go ask anybody in the NFL. So I firmly believe they will figure this out. They won't be a top five defense, but I do believe this team has the capability of being a top 12 to 15 defense. I really do. And I think they will be. But in the meantime, as they're figuring that out, they've got to find ways to win. And this game, for me, is the first real big game of the year. Week one, you want to win. It's Cleveland. It's, you know, it's kind of a budding rivalry. But look, you don't have to win. They won the game. Because they won that game, I think they should have beat Baltimore. But at the same point, I don't think it was like an, oh, my God, we have to have it type game. You didn't win. It happens. It's probably the hardest road game you're going to have all year. This game is a big game. The Raiders are home to the Dolphins. The Broncos are home to the Jets. They're both probably going to win. If you lose this game, you're dead last in the West. You're two games back of both those teams. So I think the Chiefs will eventually catch both those teams, even if that's the case. But the Chargers are probably your biggest competition, and you lose at home to them. So this is a big game. The Chiefs have to win. And go look at the AFC, by the way, this week. Everybody who's any good is playing a tomato can. You have to win this game. This is a big game for Kansas City.
Yeah, it certainly is. You don't want to fall too far behind. Whatever you think of the Broncos and the Raiders and their long-term prospects for the season, they're 2-0. That helps. That helps. So the Chiefs have some ground to make up, and you don't want to have one of these games where you get a bunch of stupid penalties or the offense is sloppy. Those kind of games happen. It better not happen this week. They're coming off a loss. They need to be focused. They need to be mad, and they need to go take care of business at home. All right, it's time to get into our predictions for Sunday's game. I'm going to be honest with you, Verderam. I almost picked against the Chiefs in this game. It's been, I can't remember the last time I picked against them. I didn't pick against them one single time all of last year. But I've always said, if they give me a reason to pick them, I'm going to pick them. If they give me a reason to pick against them, I'm going to pick against them until, you know, until they change my mind. I'm close to the point where when they're going up against good teams, I'm feeling like I might pick against them because of the defense. I'm hoping that it doesn't come to that. So I've got Chiefs 31, Chargers 28. I think they're going to eke one out here, but I what I've seen so far, it doesn't look like a comfortable win. Although Vegas doesn't agree with me. I think the Chiefs are like 6-point favorites or something like that.
6.5. And that line opened at that. It hasn't moved.
Yeah.
See, Alan, this is where you and I diverge a little bit. Like, they've played two top 10 teams in the football. And they won one game and just basically handed Baltimore the other game. Now, look, Baltimore had some turnovers as well early in that game. But my God, I mean, Kansas City, as that game wore on, that game was a tragedy from a football perspective. That game was a sideshow as they just blew the game in the fourth quarter. I get being nervous about the defense, but Kansas City is just so powerful offensively. I don't think they're going to lose the game. Now, they could. Like, to me, the fear in this game is that they get no pressure on Herbert, and it just turns into a game where he throws for 400 yards and 5 touchdowns because they just can't stop anybody. Yeah. I'm going 38-33. I think they will win the game. I do not think they will cover. I think it'll be a very high-scoring game. Because why wouldn't it be? The Chargers can't stop anybody. Neither can the Chiefs. But I think in the end, being at home helps. Having Mahomes really helps. And I think it'll be a game where the Chiefs will stop them a few times. And I also just – and I really believe this. They cannot be any worse defensively. They cannot be. It is impossible to be worse than what they've been. So I do think – God, I mean, law of averages – got to be a little better this week. Like, got to get a stop in the red zone. Got to get some stops on third down. If they do that, they're going to win. So, concerned? Absolutely. But I honestly can say I never really thought about picking against them. This is big. This is a big one. You win this game, you get to 2-1, you go play the Eagles, who are by far the easiest team they've played all year long. Okay? And then they come home and play the Bills, who quietly, Josh Allen has been absolutely hideous early in the season. So,
not good.
We'll see. But this is a big one. You got to win this game. They lose this game, you're going to hear me singing a much different tune about this team come Sunday.
It's funny because normally I'm like, I would say between the two of us, you, when it comes to the Chiefs, you tend to be the more raw nerve, emotional. And normally I'm pretty steady and like, hey, everybody don't panic. Right. And I was a little unhinged in the post game show on Sunday, but probably more so. It was worse than I was in, after the Super Bowl. I think I was mad. I was annoyed. So I hope this isn't a sign of things to come where you're the calm, rational one, and I'm just going completely bonkers. Your rants are better than mine. The world doesn't need that.
No, listen, I just really believe sometimes teams just lose games. It just happens. You know, I mean, if you go back and look at the Patriots, all those years they win Super Bowls, they would routinely start 2-2, 3-2, 2-2, 3-2, you know, 5-3. The year the Chiefs won the Super Bowl, they were 6-4. Last year, Tampa was 7-5. It just happens. Like, I've just learned, look, unless the Chiefs get injured, they're making the playoffs. They're going to make the playoffs. And I got to tell you, if the Chiefs went 11-6 and they were the 3 seed, they got in the playoffs, and the last 3 or 4 weeks of the year, they were playing their best football, you want to play them? I don't give a shit where the game is. Excuse the language. I don't care. Buffalo, Cleveland, Baltimore, bring on all of them, right? If you're the Chiefs, it's about being healthy, and it's about playing your best football as the year goes on. I get it's frustrating. They're not playing well defensively. I truly believe they'll get much better as the year goes on. They have too much talent not to. I just look at KC, and I really believe the talent's there. Like, and I also believe, by the way, they've played two really good teams, and they should be 2-0. Like, it's not like they've been getting blown out in these games. They won one of them. They should have won the other. I think in the end, I think they go home this weekend. I don't think it's easy. I think the Chargers are a playoff team. They're a good team. It's going to be a game that's back and forth. Herbert's going to make a lot of plays. But I do believe that in the end, Mahomes and the offense will make enough plays. They'll win the game. They'll get to 2-1. And then you got to stretch ahead. It's not bad. The Eagles, look, they've been a little frisky, but the Chiefs clearly should win that game, even on the road. Then you got the Bills at home. They're at home. And I got to say, the Bills actually play right in the Kansas City's hands because they can't run the ball either. Like, they want to throw and throw and throw. That's perfect for the Chiefs. And then you play Washington, who has a good front seven, a good defense. But, like, I mean, if Taylor Heineke beats Patrick Mahomes, I will be very surprised. So, for the Chiefs, you win this game, things start setting up a lot nicer for you. We've talked about it all offseason. The hardest stretch of the season for the Chiefs is the first 5 games of the year. No doubt. Well, this is a big one. You win this game, I think you're in great shape. I really do. I think if they win this game, they're right where they need to be, both for the division, for the 1 seed, for all of it.
Yeah, and sometimes it's about perspective, too. We've only had 2 games. If the Chiefs had that Browns game in Week 1, and then they won 3 in a row, and the defense played, you know, league average, something like that, and then they lost another game to Baltimore the way that they did, We wouldn't all be on the ledge about the run defense and all those things. What we'd be saying is, you know what? Yeah, the run defense isn't great, but they played 2 of the best teams in the NFL at running the football, and that's going to ding your stats up a little bit, right? We may not be talking about the run defense. We'd just be like, yeah, you know, those teams are really good at running the ball. That's what they do. Chiefs split. You know, we're happy. So it'll be interesting after 3 or 4 more games to see what we're talking about, but perspective matters.
Yeah, like, what if these games, what if the Cleveland and Baltimore games are Week 8 and Week 9 of the season? Like, you'd be like, man, the defense really stunk the last couple weeks. Got to get it together.
Yeah,
and that would pretty much be it, right? Like, I just firmly believe in, like, great teams, they're great. And I know it sounds like a really stupid fortune cookie thing to say, but, like, I love baseball, although the A's have tested that to the limit this year. But if you have a guy who hits 290 every year, and in April he hits 240, it's probably going to be a month he hits 340. It's just, got, you are what you are. They're a great team. And by the way, if you notice, nobody outside Kansas City, and even a sliver of panic. It's been like, oh, yeah, Chiefs, yeah, lost a game. Huh, that's weird. Like, no one even, like, you don't even blink. And it's the same thing for us. Like, when the Packers got beat 38-3 by New Orleans, there wasn't a doubt in my mind the Packers were going to bounce back and be really good because they're really good. They have Aaron Rodgers. Like, they're going to win a bunch of games. I think when you're a fan of the team, it's such a different perspective. Like, I know one of my best friends, he came over. He's a huge Packers fan. And he came over the Monday night game. And they're playing the line. He's sweating bullets. And I was just laughing. I'm like, dude, they're going to win this game. Like, they're at home against the Lions. They're gonna, I know, but they've been terrible. And, like, you know, they won the game. They won the game going away. Like, I just think when you're in it, emotionally invested, you think of all the things that can go wrong. When you're not emotionally invested, you look at it and go, yeah, but they're just better. They're just better. They're going to win.
Yeah.
And I really feel like that's what it is right now with the Chiefs. Like, they, as long as they're healthy, they're going to win a bunch of games. For the record, I still think they're going to win 13, 14 games this year. I do. And I think if they do that, they're the one seed. And if they're the one seed, good luck. Good luck going in there and beating them. So I think they're okay.
I'll tell you, they do owe me money because I told you on the post-game show I had that 8-game parlay, $3 to win like 120. The Packers won.
You did all this yourself.
8 games. 8 games I picked correctly. I had to pick the Raiders. I had to stomach doing that. And that my own team cost me. So I'm going to send a bill to Clyde Edwards-Helaire for $122. He can afford it. And I'm going to use that money when he sends me the check to buy Count Chocula. However many boxes of Count Chocula I can get for 122. Let's do the math. Let's say. All right, so 122, let's say Count Chocula, what, $5? That's 24 and a half boxes of Count Chocula. That's half the year. I can get through a box a week, roughly half the year. That'd be all right. So put the word out to Clyde. Does he have a Twitter?
No, Micah, don't ask anything to Clyde.
Yes, but please don't. Yeah, we're not God. Trying to. Please don't
There's
go trolling on our behalf.
People
yeah, that's
who, after
the worst.
A game at the player on Twitter and are like, you cost me my fantasy league. Yeah, I'm sure he's really concerned. I'm sure it's what's killing him. Meanwhile, the guy just let down everybody in his locker room. And you're over there, you know, Johnny Couch Potato, who just lost his free league fantasy football game.
Right.
Like, I can't believe it. You cost me. Now my brother's got, you know, he's got bragging rights. Oh, please don't at player. I can't stand when I'm critical of somebody, like I'm off of a film study or even off of just watching a game live. And somebody like in the comments will at the player and be like, see, I told you you're terrible. You're like, yeah, that's great. Thanks.
Oh, yeah.
Like, what is wrong with you?
Anybody who does that should have to go right to the player's face and deliver the message. So if they reach out to him on Twitter and they're like, you suck, you're terrible. Like, lock them in a room with Clyde and see how that works out for him.
I always laugh when you get the guy at the bar who's like, you know, the game's on TV. He's just something like, oh, you know, I could have gained 7 yards on that. And means it because, you know, he was like all county back in high school,
right?
You know, 40 years ago. You're like, okay, Jim Bob, I would pay good money to see you get a handoff in an NFL game. See how many yards you can gain. Like, I don't care how big the hole is. You know, do you remember the show? We can wrap. I know we've been on for like an hour. Have you ever seen the show that it used to be on? It's been off the air now, probably for a decade. Like Pros versus Joes.
I remember it. Yeah.
So they would have. I mean, obviously, they would have like former professional athletes, you know, out way beyond their prime who would come on and they play against guys, just random people, you, me, most of our listeners, I'm sure, who are just people who believe, hey, you know what? If I didn't have that bum ankle, I could have gone pro. And I remember one of the shows, like Eric Dickerson was on it, and they set up two dummies, I don't know, maybe 6 feet apart, and you had to try to tackle Eric Dickerson in like this like made up hallway on the football field. And this guy who was going against him was probably, I don't know, 5'8" and like a 170, and was just talking an obscene amount of crap. Like, and so the first play, it's very obvious, like Eric Dickerson like kind of just like was like jogging through the hole, and the guy kind of holds on to him a little bit. And he didn't really tackle him, but just slows him down. And he gets up and he just starts jawing at Eric Dickerson. And Eric Dickerson has this look on his face like, yeah, okay. The next time he hits the hole, like he's about 28 years old with a full head of steam, he kills this guy. Like knee pad to the throat, just kills him. And this guy, like, dude's like face down on the ground, just like holding his neck. I was like, that's the end of Pros versus Joes.
Yeah.
That's it.
It's like, over. Here comes the lawsuit.
Herter right on the 30-yard line. Yeah. And it just went to show, like, Eric Dickerson at that point had to be in his 40s. Just destroy, like, folded this guy up like a chair. It was unbelievable. I always think about that when you get
the, I hope the 52-year-old it's on the dude internet.
Or stuff like that.
I hope it's on the internet.
I've looked. I've never been able to find it. But I'm telling you, it was, and hopefully you can find it. It was incredible. He literally, it looked like me running through a toddler. It was unbelievable.
That's pretty much what it is. Yeah.
And the guy just like folds in half, like in the fetal position, and doesn't move. Yep. And it's just, that's it.
So, he's probably still laying there.
Yeah. I've met Eric Dickerson. Big man.
Yeah.
I don't think people understand, at least some people don't, how big and how fast these guys are. I remember standing on sidelines during NFL games when I was an intern for ESPN in college. I worked a handful of the night games. And I remember watching Vince Wilfork like warm up, probably 350 pounds. Vince Wilfork's lateral quickness was insane. Like, you'd be watching, like, oh my God. Like, how is that guy? I remember I was on the sideline once for a game with where Derek Johnson was on the Chiefs. And it was in the prime of his career. He came out, he wasn't wearing his jersey. He was just wearing a sweatshirt. It was warm up. And he was running around, and I thought he was a DB, like just from his speed. And then I looked, and the number, you know, number 56, and of course, like, you know, he got closer, I could see his face. I was like, that's Derek Johnson? That guy's a linebacker? Like, you watch the games. I remember, you know, seeing Terrell Owens look, I've had the pleasure of covering the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. Fan-sided, and I remember like meeting Patrick Mahomes and talking to him. Patrick Mahomes is not that much smaller than Travis Kelce. Which, like, to think about that is bonkers. Like, Kelce's 6'5", 260. Mahomes is probably 6'4", 235. Like, these guys are huge. So the next time you're at a bar and Johnny is like, you know, I could have made that play. And no, Johnny couldn't have made that play. Believe me, Johnny'd be in a coma right now if he tried to make that play.
Yeah, Willie Lanier is in his 70s, and he could probably lay both of us out right now. No problem.
The man's nickname was Contact.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. That
was, yeah, he was at the draft. He was at the draft one year when I was covering it, and I had joked on Arrowhead Attic, like, hey, do you think if I give Willie $20, he'll lay me out? Like, it just would be it'd be an honor, you know, take three steps, put me on my ass. He wouldn't be the first one to want to do that. All right, everybody, we're going to get out of here. Listen, so this is an afternoon kick. What is it? 3:25, something like that.
Noon.
Oh, is it noon? It's a noon kick. Okay, so noon kick, and then we're going to be live for a post-game show around 6:37 on the Arrowhead Addict YouTube channel. Make sure you check it out. Watch our Twitters, at R. Patrick Allen, at Matt Verderam. We'll be tweeting about it. I think Matt Connor's going to join us. It's going to be fun time. So we'll see you guys after the game. Thank you so much for listening. Leave us reviews over at Apple and all that stuff. And as always, go Chiefs. I gotta go find some Count Chocula.
Go to Target.
Yeah. If they don't have it, I'm gonna just ask to talk to the manager.